I would start the meeting so they wanted to stay on time. We have a lot of testifiers who came from throughout the state. I want to make sure we get them heard today. I'll call the meeting to order later when I finally get a quorum. Here comes Magnus. They all come tripping in. I think we started at a charge my members a fuck if they're late. I'll make lots of money in their work. Kevin, Ray, are you going to start with Minda? There he is. Good morning, Mr. Ray.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm one of those guys tripping in myself, so.
No, I saw your
memory,
but then you just didn't get your coffee.
That's right. Mr. Chair, my understanding is that today we'd like to get accomplish a little bit more than the original agenda, in that you'd like an overview of the capital budget and the governor's recommendations, as well as the testimony on each of the projects. And we do have, if you will, some expert resources here from MnDOT to talk to each of the projects, and I thought we'd just go through them in the order after I give a brief overview.
That'd be fine.
My background, MnDOT is a little bit unique in its funding requests, in that we have requests that not only include general obligation bonds, but also use trunk highway bonds and trunk highway cash appropriations. I will cover the governor's recommendation in the order that they appear in your budget book on page one. I don't believe this is necessary at this point in time. The governor's recommendation doesn't necessarily prioritize each request. They stand on their own, if you will. Our first request in the original highest-ranked agency request was an analog-to-digital conversion. This is for our communications backbone, and if I could use the layman's version of this, I would say that we're using 8-track tapes for our communication systems instead of anything that's more modern. And as will be testified, the bottom line is that the manufacturers are no longer making the equipment. We cannot get parts replacements for our communication infrastructure. This also supports the State Patrol and DNR, by the way. And more specifically, the FCC has made some regulatory directives that mean that we need to move our timetable up and in fact, convert from an analog version of our communication system to digital. You'll hear more about that from Mr. Andy Terry of our Electronic Communications Office. We have two local or general obligation funded projects, the local bridge replacement program for $28 million and the local road improvement grants for $10 million. The local road improvement grants take advantage of legislation established in the 2002 legislature and our grants in the local road account. The Mankato headquarters building, the governor's recommendation is $10 million. We'll be discussing that at some length. Our cost estimates and the like support a number that's in the $15 million plus range. We are working with the governor's office to look at the total costs and how we can balance, if you will, the budget and keep within the governor's guidelines. At the point that Mr. Post rides to discuss that, we'll cover that in more detail. We have small capital projects. This is a unique project for us this year in the sense that these projects, which are typically under $1 million, and our truck station remodeling or cold or warm storage shed replacements or upgrades are typically in our operating budget. And you'll see that number in this classification again in the biennial budget. But we have a kind of patch-through number because we did not submit anything in our past operating budget, so we have nothing in our biennial budget at this point in time. So this is a stayover until we get to next year's biennial budget request. Finally, of course, we have the North Star Commuter Rail. Governor's recommendation is $37.5 million of general obligation bonds for that project. At this point, with your permission, Mr. Chair, I'd like to call Andy Terry up with me and talk to the analog to digital conversion briefly.
Before you start, I'll officially call a meeting in order that we have a quorum now. We are taping. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. If I could have a page, I do have some handouts.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Andy Terry. I'm the director of MnDOT's Office of Electronic Communications. My office is responsible for the design, installation, and maintenance of the radio systems, not only for MnDOT, but for other state agencies as well. The Department of Public Safety and the Department of Natural Resources are major customers of ours. This request that Mr. Gray briefly covered is for maintaining a piece of our system that's a critical component of our radio communications infrastructure. The handout that I'm sending around is a one-pager that gives kind of a brief overview, and I'd like to step you through that real quickly. You could just talk a little bit about what elements make up a radio communications system and what this analog-to-digital conversion focuses on. If you think about a radio communications system, there are really four elements of the radio network. There's the things that are in the dispatch center, the console equipment and the logging recorders, the equipment that are actually housed within the facility. There are things that are out in the field at the power sites, the shelters, the generators, and the fixed transmitters that actually broadcast the radio communications. There's the link equipment, and the map on the back reflects the link equipment, and that's the area that we're focusing on with this request that ties all these remote tower sites together and brings that information back to the dispatch center. And this is really the component of the network that provides for wide area communications and ties all the mobile units in the field back to the dispatch location. The last piece of the radio communication system is the thing that's actually in the vehicle, the two-way radio, or on the user's body, the personal communications device, two-way radio. This communications infrastructure investment focuses specifically on the link equipment, the part of the network that ties everything together. It's the piece of the backbone that provides for tying the most users back into the communications center. As Mr. Gray had talked about, the Federal Communications Commission has made some changes in the regulatory environment that has caused our system to become a secondary system. They've actually taken the operating frequencies that we use in our system and reallocated those for mobile satellite services. And so right now, MnDOT is operating in an environment where we could potentially have interference caused to our system and have no recourse through the Federal Communications Commission. In light of that, the vendor community has migrated away from this technology and went to a digital technology in a different spectrum band, the 6 gigahertz band. And so our proposal is to convert our existing system to this new band, and that will alleviate the problems that we're having with vendors not supporting the current existing infrastructure. So this is not an expansion of the system. This is not a new system to provide additional capacity and additional users. This is basically replacing what exists to continue to maintain our system, and that's consistent with the department's philosophy of investing in systems to keep them to maintain what exists before we move on to do these new things like partnering and expanding of the system. So that's a general overview, and I'll be happy to answer questions of the committee.
And the budget request is for how much?
Mr. Chair, the budget request is for $3 million. This the total project costs are $18 million. We have invested $3 million to date. The governor's recommendation is $3 million for this biennium, with the anticipation that for planning purposes of $6 million each 2006 and 2008 coming back before the legislature.
And this is being funded by trunk highway bonds or by cash?
This is a cash appropriation from the trunk highway fund for $3 million.
Any questions from the committee? Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gentlemen, I understand currently you're dispatching for the High Patrol and maybe some others also. Are you going to continue to do that with this system? Will you be allowed to do that or enable you to do that?
Mr. Chair and members, we actually partner with other agencies in how we operate the system. We actually have State Patrol dispatching for us.
Okay.
We have joint centers. It's a partnership between multiple agencies that have MnDOT, State Patrol, and the Department of Natural Resources have dispatch services. We provide the technology stewardship and the infrastructure maintenance and management, and they provide the actual personnel in the center to do the dispatching. It's a partnership between agencies. That will continue.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Who's next?
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Representative Earhart.
You know, I think I'm sitting in the chair that you must have sat in, Mr. Chairman.
What do you need, old man?
It's broken.
What do you need, old man?
Crippled and...
get to it. You got a lot to cover.
It's terrible. You're spending money on communication system and you don't fix up the chairs in the committee room. Mr. Chairman, my question is...
question there somewhere.
My question is, are you responsible for all of the communications to what degree? I think I just heard some of it. But Kremnet, what do you do with that? And,
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my role and responsibility within the Department of Transportation is for wireless communications, tying field devices back into the infrastructure. The CRIMNET system is a database, data warehouse network that is more falls into the information infrastructure, the IT infrastructure, and that's within the Department of Public Safety. So the connection there would be if there's a need or a desire to get that information out to the field, to users, you know, for laptop computers in vehicles at some point, which is envisioned some point in the future, I would likely play a role in that, and this infrastructure would likely become a component of that. But at this stage, the two infrastructures are separate and independent.
Are they compatible?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, compatible, yes. Capacity is another question that we would need to direct as far as whether this would actually have the capacity needed to provide that level of service. It's one component of a broader network. But the compatibility doesn't exist.
See, the rest of them are, they're all fine.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions? Nick?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask our state aid folks, specifically Mr. Rick Jonas, to talk to both the local bridge replacement program request and the local road improvement grants in tandem, if you will.
Good morning, Mr. Jonas.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. First, I'll talk about the governor's budget request for the local bridge replacement program. Brief history on that program. It started in 1976. At that time, there were 4,800 deficient bridges across the state. As of this time, we're down to 2,100 deficient bridges. The program has had wonderful support from the legislature and from local agencies trying to get these bridges replaced and keep the roads safe. This money is used on structures and culverts over 10 feet in length. And the money that we receive from the bridge bonding program is leveraged using federal and other local sources at ratios typically greater than 2-1. At this time, we have 98 agencies that have made requests of our office for funding through this program for bridges to be replaced during the next biennium. The governor is proposing, after reviewing this along with other bond requests, $28 million for the program to replace approximately 170 bridges. These structures, a lot of the smaller bridges have been replaced, and we're finding that the average cost of bridges, in comparison with testimony from previous bienniums, has gone up. Cost per structure, we're looking at larger structures as we move forward into tackling this bridge problem. Our plan for the $28 million is to take as a first priority, we need $6.6 million to match federal funds that are coming into the state for the local bridge replacement programs. We have $1 million currently on a waiting list for funding that locals have submitted in plans that are approved and just awaiting word that there's money before they can be filed for contract. We expect that by the end of May that backlog would roll by an additional $8 million, and that would leave us $14 million to carry us through by any.
Any questions? Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, sir, does this include the big bridge project up at, is it Sauk Rapids, where we're struggling with that?
Correct. The $28 million does not include the big Sauk Rapids bridge, which we were aware that there's a need for $13.5 million for. The governor's press release talked in terms of the 170 bridges, and at that amount of work, it's our understanding that that is not included in there. I know our agency has made a commitment that we will try to find funds for that structure. At the time that we put together our information for the governor's budget, we were kind of assuming that that project was sometime later in 2005 is when letting would be, and there would be one more legislative session. The governor's budget does not include funds for that project at this time.
Thank you.
It's kind of news to me, because I thought when he let the bonds last fall that he said that would be the first things to come off, first bridge come off the top of the next bonding cycle. So the governor has not said that, and that will not be the case?
The only information our office is relying on right now is that in their press release,
The statement was that this $28 million would replace 170 bridges, and the only way that could be possible, based on the information we provided him, is that it would not be included. So it's our understanding it's not included. We were of the impression that the project will not be ready until late in 2005, although we're hearing now that it may be ready earlier in 2005 for construction. I think the governor was not aware of that, but he put together his budget, and unless directed otherwise, we are assuming it's not included.
And Representative Beard, to that point, I don't think we ever designated a bridge in a bonding bill, and Representative Leader can correct me. So I wasn't about to go down that road anyway of saying one bridge got priority over another. Otherwise, we end up with a four fight that we'll never end. Representative William.
Mr. Chairman, I think that there has been only one instance where a specific bridge has been mentioned, and I think that was actually done in two separate bridge bonding bills, and that would have been for the Bloomington Ferry Bridge.
Woo-hoo. Oh, excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
This district doesn't need anything.
Most people can bridge this district. So.
Any other questions? There are none. Representative Ruth, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, back to the other point. I was wondering if you had talked with the Commissioner of Transportation, Carol Molnar, about this. Because I talked to the representative on that, it seemed that they had had that promise about Sauk Rapids. That's why I'm just curious about the bridge.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I have spoke to the Commissioner off and on during the last 6 months, and I understand that our department is committed to working with the city and helping them get their project funded. I have not had direct correspondence in the last few weeks, and like as I said, the Governor's press release is the information we're relying on.
Thank you.
We might want to send a memo to the Governor's office and get clarification on that one way or another. Representative Reedy, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Mr. Gray, past policy normally been using trunk highway funds for all the buildings and stuff. And I see the Mankato, you've got bonds. Is that correct? And how come?
Mr. Gray. Mr. Chair, Representative Leader, that is correct. We've got bonds for two principal reasons. One, I would call it from a financial academic type of perspective. The bonding environment is very good. The classical model for bonds has been building projects. In fact, virtually all of course, the other building requests in the general obligation fund or funded bonds are buildings. We have not typically funded it that way. We've been, if you will, cash rich and to a certain degree in the past. At this point, though, academically, the bonding model is strongest because of the interest rate environment and the longevity of the project. Secondly, on the Mankato front, too, in a more broader sense, we're trying to, if you will, work the fund harder. This committee in particular has pushed us to do that. And we're utilizing our cash more aggressively, utilizing our fund balance more aggressively to deliver projects. And at this point in time, it would be a bit of a luxury to use a cash appropriation for this. It's not undoable, but we think the prudent fiscal policy approach going forward for buildings of this significance, it's also a $10 million to $15 million building, and we'll be discussing that, that's a prudent use of cash in our given our interest rate environment and the type of the project.
No further questions? Thank you.
Oh, you. Mr. Chair, we're also going to talk about the local road improvement account recommendation from the governor.
Mr. Chair, I'll cover that briefly for you. The local road improvement account was created in 2002 following a study. Funds can be provided either in the form of grants or loans, and they will assist local agencies in working on projects with MnDOT. MnDOT has been directed through the Office of State Aid within that program to work with local agencies to establish criteria for operating the program. The administration's request for this program for funding for the coming biennium is $10 million, and it has directed that the funding assistance is for construction, reconstruction, or reconditioning of local roads with statewide or regional significance that are directly associated with development of major state road projects.
Any questions? We have a bill coming up on that later, so we're going to get lots of testimony on it.
Representative, Mr. Chair, at some moment I'd like to ask a question about rail service improvement bonds, but if that's coming up on the agenda, I can hold the question, or let me know when to fire on that.
Mr. Chair, there are no requests at this point in time for rail service improvement bonds, but I certainly would be willing to take a question if you'd like me to address that now or at the end of the presentation on the other projects. It's up to you.
And would be fine with me.
Well, it's all brought up, it's answered now. There were no requests, or the governor didn't allow for any?
Mr. Chair and members, the governor, there were the agency requests identified up to $6 million in each of this biennium and the two subsequent planning estimate biennium for planning estimates. The governor's recommendation does not include any funding for these bonds to support the Mercy loan or grant programs or rail bank purchase programs at this point in time.
Follow-on question is the strategic score that the agency assigns to these different categories. I assume the higher the number, the more important in the transportation overview. Is that correct? Or
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would say that, first of all, the strategic scoring process is utilized by the Department of Finance and developed by them to assist agencies and, I assume, the governor's office in making decisions. It is a to take the score very literally sometimes can be a risky proposition. It depends upon the agency's ranking of the priority, which may not agree with quite frankly the governor's perception of the ranking. There are the time at which you input the project or the proposed project has something to do with it. The criteria is can be more adequately described by the Department of Finance, but obviously, generally, the higher the score under the Department of Finance criteria, I would say that that's consistent. I would also say it's not necessarily a transportation scoring. It's a overall, across all of the agency scoring, is my understanding. And I will confirm that with the Department of Finance. If it's different, I will let you know. So I would not say that the scoring is relative to other transportation projects. It's relative to all agency requests that the governor is considering or any of his own initiatives.
Thank you. Next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, at this point in time, I'd like to call up Dick Post, who is the department's chief architect and heads up our building and facility program for the department. We're going to cover both the Mankato headquarters building and our small projects requests.
Mr. Poles, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, Mr. Chair, Representative.
And Mr. Chair, if I could, I want to go back to my opening comments and identify, and we're going to cover the Mankato projects first, if we could, and identify the governor's recommendation is $10 million. Our agency estimate for the cost of the project as planned is $15.7 million. We are working with the governor's office to review the request, and there are several options. We also had a very fluid environment here. We're working very aggressively to get an appraisal on the property to ensure that as part of the governor's request, he is looking for us to get a fair market value if we could. For the project. And fair market value, I'm not an appraiser, but that can kind of vary from appraiser to appraiser. But we've got some feedback on that. We've been working very aggressively with the city of Mankato, who has been a very strong suitor for our property and would be a lead contender for the sale of property if indeed we can meet the conditions of this committee or the legislature and the governor's office. We also have been looking at the balance of our transportation requests, including the Department of Administration has a trunk highway bonding request for the transportation building. And some preliminary discussion with them indicates that there may be some ability to move the amounts back and forth a bit pending discussing with this further with the governor's office, of course. So at this point in time, we're going to talk to a figure that is a detailed estimate in the 15.7 million dollar range, and attempt to reconcile the difference and get back to the committee pending a conversation with the governor's office.
Mr. Post.
Thank you, Chairman. Mr. Chairman, representatives, the Mankato District 7 headquarters, pre-design studies began in the mid-1980s looking at all of MnDOT headquarters throughout the state. Mankato is the last one to be completely rebuilt for the new tasking that's been over the years that has developed, or the districts do highway design, survey, construction work, instead of that being done at the central office. The existing facility is built in 1963, approximately 110,000 square feet. It's had two minor temporary additions put on to house changes in operation. The existing site is currently 17 acres with approximately 2 acres of additional space used for drainage. The 1998 examination of the facility and the site determined that between $10 and $12 million was needed to enlarge and remodel. This represented approximately 76% of 1998 replacement costs of about $14.5 million. Currently, the site is too small for our increasing truck size. We've basically gone from single axle snowplows to tandem snowplows, which are approximately 4 to 6 feet longer when you throw on the plow in the front. Our HVAC system of the building is 40 years old, and we just added a new chiller about 4 years ago, but the rest of the system needs major work, major replacement. Our truck bays, because of the increase of the size of the tandem trucks, we used to build warm space for storage of these vehicles at 80 foot so we could get double loading. We now have to build at 90 feet because of the increased size of the equipment. Increased use of hydraulics and computer equipment in these snowplow trucks requires us to keep these building these vehicles in warm storage when they're not in use. Hydraulics will freeze and the computer equipment will not operate properly if it gets too cold at night and they're kept outside. The increased load lane miles in District 7 has increased the number of truck snowplows that we have for spaces that we need for equipment and snowplows in this facility from 34 to the 78 needed today. It's better than a 100% increase. So because of this, the decision was made to build a new facility rather than try to add on to an old existing facility that was too small, and the site did not allow for much major expansion because of the increased turning radiuses of the larger trucks and the vendors that were delivering our salt to our chemical storage facility on the site are now delivering in 18-wheel vehicles rather than the small dump trucks they used to, which requires more turning space and so on. Consequently, in 2000, a new site was purchased, 40 acres. It's in the eastern edge of Mankato. It was purchased for $404,000. The new facility is proposed to be 163,000 square feet. It will house the district management team, the highway design, survey, and construction offices, and a materials laboratory, which currently provides material testing classes and space for Mankato State University to bring their students over and actually do testing in a material testing lab. We will also house vehicle storage and maintenance shops, specialty shops for the bridge section of this district, maintenance of radio, electrical service, signs, and facility maintenance itself. An inventory center will also be included and will support all district functions. This facility will have partners, because we are partnering with State Patrol with our Transportation Operations Communications Center, TOCC. It will handle all the area for Southwest Minnesota. It includes dispatch, as we've talked before about the communications request. It includes dispatch for State Patrol officers, for MnDOT, and for DNR conservation officers in the southwest part of the state. Constructing a new facility on a larger site will allow MnDOT to gain efficiencies of scale and management cohesion, to be able to consolidate light functions and build a facility of size to accommodate our largest snowplows and other highway engineering equipment. It will take advantage of new construction methods, build to current codes, allow for future expansion, and update current technologies in construction, communications, energy management, and take care of better health and welfare of our employees. Subject to your questions?
Representative Adelson.
Thank you, Chairman. Mr. Post, I assume then that this new facility is east on 14, correct? And a follow-up.
It's in their industrial area to the east, just off of 14.
Have you guys ever thought of, since Mankato's looking for a new or a different site, of partnering with the cities? I know in my community of Minnetonka, Hennepin County and the city partnered together to build a new facility, and they got cost savings and they shared costs.
Chairman, Representative, there are some partner things we are doing with the city of Mankato and the county. Our storage facility will be shared. There is some storage space that currently is partnered with them right now. The city has chosen to go a different direction. They prefer to consolidate all of their facilities in one location. They preferred to go with our old location. That's what they're looking at. They have a number of old sites in downtown that they're trying to bring into one. There was discussions originally, but Mankato decided to go that route rather than do what we are doing in Thief River Falls and other areas too.
Representative Durkee. Just a quick follow-up to Representative Adelson, and then I have another question. What about Brewer County? Have you had discussions with them? Where are they at with their facilities, and do they have a need down the road? Because I do agree that the partnership ought to be looked at when possible.
Mr. Post.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I don't know the extent of the discussions with Brewer. I do know they were talked to originally, but I don't know what became of those discussions. They're evidently not in this, or they don't.
But they have, Mr. Chair, they have been approached, and they're aware of this construction project. They're aware that there have been partnerships around the state, and if this is the time to think about it. If they have, you know, I hate to see Brewer County come in 2 years from now and say, gee, we need a new facility too, and build it right next to your new facility.
Chairman, Representative, it's my understanding they have been. I don't know that for a fact, though. I'd have to find that out and get back to you.
Okay. And if you would, I'd appreciate that. And Mr. Chair, second question, public safety and Department of Natural Resources in this facility, what amount of space are they taking up? What percent of the facility? And number two, what kind of lease rates are you charging those departments to utilize the state facility that you're building?
Mr. Post.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the DNR, state patrol space is approximately 9,500 square feet, which is basically what they are requesting throughout the state. It's what we built recently for them in St. Cloud and also in Detroit Lakes in our last facilities there. We do charge them the local growing, the local area rate per square foot for rental lease purposes.
DNR.
DNR is not a part of the square footage of this facility. It is part of the dispatch. I don't know of any arrangements with them for costs. We also have a partner, DBS, Division of Vehicle Services, is also in the facility. They have approximately 2,000 square feet. The same thing applies. We will charge them the appropriate rental for the area. The State Patrol and DBS will also share in the common space that's available. We've designed the building such that the public or other agencies can use the building without getting into MnDOT spaces. We've kept them separate so they have conference areas, restroom facilities, and so on for the clients that come in to do the testing for driver's licenses, vehicles, or highway patrol use.
Mr. Chair, more specific, do you know what that rate is going to be per square foot?
Mr. Chairman, not right off answer. I'd have to go back and look.
Could you get that to me?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Post, I believe there's been some discussion about selling the current building, and I'm wondering if that's been appraised, what it'd be worth, and then if those dollars would be put towards the purchase of the new building.
Sir Coles.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that is part of what we are talking with the Governor's Office about and Department of Finance about right now, what it is worth, and we're working aggressively, as Gray said, to get this price and to get this settled as to what the what will happen to the existing facility.
Mr. Chair, to that point, I had a couple of comments. One of the issues that we're working with the Governor's Office on is that late in the budget development cycle, we did get an appraisal on the property. That appraisal was in the range of $3 million plus, $3.35 million. However, as Mr. Post alluded to, we have several out-of-pocket costs that would, if you will, discount that appraisal value, at least from our purpose, are looking at it, if you will. A couple of those key costs are any HVAC or heating and ventilation AC upgrades that code would require. We have some environmental costs, including asbestos removal, and we also have some issues in our yard shop if a tenant or suitor of not a similar maintenance operation were to try and take the facility over, we'd have some, if you will, preparatory costs that, as we reviewed the appraisal, we don't think are taken into account for that. So we estimate those costs in the range of combined?
$500,000 for the asbestos and about $900,000 for the HVAC.
So there's some significant, if you will, deducts from that, and that's part of what we're trying to flesh out and make sure we've got the facts, because we are committed, and in fact, another ongoing negotiation. The city of Mankato is a prime suitor for the property, and I think there'd be many benefits from that for them and for us. Resale in a commercial property in an uncertain market is always a risky proposition. Nonetheless, we are also, if you will, holding their feet to the fire, and they've been very cooperative in working and have submitted some propositions to us or proposals to us to increase their contributions to property. Much of that will be in-kind design services for joint state and local projects, participating at a higher rate in some projects or interchanges in the future. So it won't be cash in hand that we'll have up front, but it will benefit MnDOT and our road and bridge program specifically. There may be some hard dollars from the sale of their existing properties. I think Mr. Post suggested that there were several properties in Mankato that they're looking to move out of, consolidate into, and sell these properties, which I think is a benefit not only to the city of Mankato Public Utilities, but also to the development side. So there's a lot going on, and that's part of the number review here that we're undergoing. I also wanted to state that as we looked at this, the difference between the government's recommendation and some of our detailed proposals, that we're looking at seeing if we can refine that $15.7 million a bit more, and also working very aggressively in a prime project that I'll talk to at the end of this is the Department Administration about. We're committed to staying within the governor's guidelines for his budget proposal in total. So if we've got to work some things out, and we'll relay that to the committee.
Representative Hausman.
I think he may have just started to answer my question in that last comment. I was wondering how you get from over $15 million to $10 million. I mean, that's a pretty big gap to shave shave costs. There must be a plan B.
Well, there is a plan B, but I will say that it's subject to the governor's review. But at this point in time, we are in preliminary discussions with the Department Administration, and that is a project that I did not cover in my introduction. And very briefly, I referred to it. I don't know if the Department Administration is going to be present today to talk to this project, but the transportation building across the street has some issues around water damage to the supporting elements of our exterior facing, the marble or granite facing, rather. And we've been looking at that for the past couple of years, and if we don't address that issue, we will have some serious issues, including in the extreme a panel falling off. There isn't a timetable for that, but there's a sense of urgency on the part of the administration They have submitted a proposal for $8.683 million to completely redo the building in one fell swoop this biennium. We are working with Kat Auskal of that department to see if it's consistent with the original planning to phase the project over two or even three bienniums, if it might not be possible to do that, and if we could adjust the two projects accordingly. So that's tipping my hand, if you will, but that's one of the Plan B alternatives that we're exploring, and subject to the governor's approval, of course, and that it meets the administration's sense of need and propriety for their request. That may be something in the office.
I guess I'll have to take remedial math to figure that one out.
We would,
well, in the end, it's up to this committee to figure out what they're going to recommend and put in the bill that reads here, so we could take some liberty and stray from the governor as we see fit. This is trunk highway bonds. We'll be paying for this, so it won't be coming out of general fund. Representative Westerberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gray, in looking at the new and improved situation here, I noticed that we're adding two new FTEs, and I'm just wondering, did the discussions occur on possibly consolidating or coordinating work efforts here at all?
Mr. Gray.
Chairman, Representative, we've already done that, sir. That brought in the two FTEs. 163,000 square feet in the normal general maintenance parlance should be four general maintenance workers to take care of that facility based on the norm of 3,000 square feet per hour per person. Right now have 1.5 people working at the existing building, which is already beneath the norm for the 110,000 square feet. Adding two will bring it up to 3.5. It'll still be below the norm, but it'll be what's basically within the recommended guidelines for doing work at that facility. Something we do in MnDOT that a number of other agencies also do is the general maintenance workers do not do just janitorial work. They also do preventive maintenance work, which is very important for a brand new building, especially one that's technologically as much technology as this building will have in it. And they also do minor repairs when necessary. So increasing the FTEs is something that we plan for. It doesn't always happen, but that's the intent of getting an additional two people.
We have Ross, Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chair, we briefly discussed the operating capital budget request of $3.8 million, and I think I've covered the Department Administration request for the transportation building, so there's awareness that also proposed the trunk highway bonds at its present proposal, and then I would take any questions on the projects from your committee or you.
Any further questions of Mr. Gray? Seeing none, thank you. I think the Department of Administration is going to be coming in at a later date to do the discussion on the MnDOT building here next door.
Great. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Representative Swinson. Carol Move, House File 1850 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus patient bonding bill. Whatever we're sitting out of here. Swinson, you have a lot of people testifying for your bill this morning. They're either in favor or they think you need help. So I don't know.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Representative.
They have an interest, I guess.
Okay.
I think I would say. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File 1850 is a bill asking for bonding funds for local roads. It's a $125 million request, $50 million for roads, the regional significance account. This is state, county, $25 million for a corridor account, and $50 million for our new road safety account. I certainly feel this as an important issue. The counties, in last year's bonding proposal, which the legislature passed, went strictly to the state road system, and the counties have tremendous needs, I feel, for upgrading some of the county roads, and between, they get their percentage out of the regular highway user fund, but they can't cover and keep up with the required upgrading and rebuilding of roads, and so they're requesting some bonding money to help with this. Their only other alternative, of course, is local property tax, and with the levy limits and so forth, they feel the need for to have some state assistance with this. So, with that, we have a group of people that are here to testify on the bill, and it was brought to me by the Association of Counties, and the county engineers are involved, and so with that, I would ask that you go to the list of testifiers that you have before you.
I have one question, Representative Halsman.
Just point of clarification, when we're talking about this bill, do we see the governor's recommendation there as agency priority for $10 million? Is that the comparable?
The governor, I believe, had $10 million in his bonding proposal for local roads. Now I don't know just exactly what the requirement there. Mr. Chairman, you probably know more details on that.
Representative Hauser knows that $10 million for a local road improvement account. This expands that somewhat. I mean, not only in price, but in scope. It does have a different scope to it. The
county would be the comparable line that we ought to be looking at.
That is correct. I have Commissioner Mattson. Mr. Rumble, you want to join him? It'd be great. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner. Yeah, please identify yourself for the tape.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Harlan Mattson. I'm a county commissioner from Candyhigh County. I'm also a dairy farmer, and I apologize for my voice. I'm getting it back at this point in time. And if you can hear me without the microphone, I would like to continue at that point.
It would, for the tape, though, it might be just for, in case somebody wants to hear your great voice for a while.
Thank you. Brief introduction. Current need studies show that counties are short approximately $195 million annually in preserving and maintaining the roads they're responsible for, which are the county state aid and the county highways. That incidentally represents, MnDOT is about 10% of the total miles in the state of Minnesota. The balance is done by townships and cities and counties. While counties would much prefer to have long-term solutions for funding our transportation systems, the Local Road Improvement Program, which established by statute as referred to earlier in 2002, offers another tool to assist counties and other local government units in funding some of their transportation needs at a time of declining local highway funding. For 15 years, the legislative process has failed to increase transportation user fees, including gas tax and the motor vehicle registration fees. This program, the Local Road Improvement Program, offers local governments hope in some of their long-awaited projects in getting those completed, getting them funding through this revenue stream. When the Local Road Improvement Program was established in 2002, it came with two accounts. It was not funded the first year. As you recall, that was vetoed, if I recall. The Roads Original Significance Account could provide funding for transportation projects which will support economic development, capacity and congestion relief, roads that provide local connections to other roads, and eliminating hazards. The second component, the Trunk Highway Corridor Account, was established to provide funds to local governments to meet the costs associated with MnDOT projects that intersect roads. That greatly has increased and been compounded in these last years with the accelerated bonding that MnDOT received. Counties did not receive additional funding, and as you will see later on, it is very vital that there be some projects that we do in conjunction with that accelerated funding. This Trunk Highway Corridor account allows us to do that. We would like to request that a third component be added, and as you responded earlier, Representative Quisling, that is the extension of the Local Road Improvement Program, adding in a road safety program, local road safety program. A majority of the accidents and fatalities, occur in the metro area, 59%. a majority of the fatalities, 67%, occur in the rural areas. There are issues that must be dealt with in the local road safety improvement. There's a number of components that are involved, not the which the least of are coordination, education, prioritizing research, and individuals that will testify afterwards certainly are much more knowledgeable on that. The local road safety improvement program offers us as residents of this state to begin to upgrade amount to education and to eliminate some of the vast consequences that have resulted from a lack of sustainable funding. We are respectfully requesting as counties that you incorporate $50 million into the local roads significance account, $50 million the local road safety program, half of which to be spent in the eight counties, the other half to be spent in rural counties, and finally $25 million in the trunk highway corridor account. The local road safety program would be managed very similar to the local bridge bonding program, which I know you're all aware of has been very successful and has been a great benefit to local constituents and to the citizens of Minnesota. And with that, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I would like to bring forth three pictures that I know, these are pictures of beagle puppies. And I know that they will soften your hearts and will enable you to look favorably on increasing transportation funding for the citizens of rural Minnesota. So if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner, this is a transportation. You look more favorably on potholes.
Mr. Chairman, with all due respect, I would dare say that these are the pets that people walk along roadways, and the safer we can make roadways, the longer people and pets will survive.
Commissioner, we'd be happy to see your pictures.
These puppies are 3 hours old, and they reside in my entryway in my house at this present time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner. Ms. Lovrell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Carol Lovrell, and I'm the Transportation Policy Analyst for the Association of Minnesota Counties. You heard fine comments from Commissioner Madsen, but we would like to urge the committee to consider the significant investment in the local road improvement program to help us starting to address the $195 million in need that we lack every year just in preserving and maintaining what we have. That's no expansion, no new projects. That's just maintenance of the current system, and there's much greater needs than that in the coming areas. So that's all I had to add to the comments. I'll turn it now over to Bob Vanosik from the Minnesota Intercounty Association.
Before you do, I saw two hands up over here.
Let's ask questions.
Representative Earhart, did you have a question first?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to ask the Commissioner. He quoted something about 50%, 7% of the fatalities. Well, we have an effort to increase the speed limits on rural Minnesota roads now. If that be the case, we're kind of running across purposes here. What would your comment be to that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I would think at this point in time, and I would be off the record, that I think we're already exceeding the speed limits in rural areas right now. I think it's, sir, it's a moot point of looking at increasing speed limits, because I think we're above them at this point. I don't see it as a factor.
Okay.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's generally about the bill, so maybe I'll just wait till the panel's completed.
Representative Anderson, B.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the road safety account, are there some specifics that will be put to the rural road safety account as far as areas that you're going to be addressing in regards to projects on the road, or is it basically going to be education projects, or is it going to be other things dealing with the road specifically?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, you will hear testimony from the county engineers on how your question.
Okay.
They have some specifics on how that will occur.
Very good. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, Bob.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Bob Vanosik here representing the Metropolitan Inter-County Association. You've already heard from Commissioner Mattson. You're going to hear from several other individuals as to why this funding and this legislation is needed. I just want to remind you that it was the House that took the lead in establishing the Local Road Improvement Program a couple of years ago, as well as providing initial funding for it. 2 years ago in the bonding bill, the House included some $30 million for this program, as well as an additional $5 million to upgrade 10-ton roads. Funding did survive the conference committee 2 years ago, but unfortunately, as Commissioner indicated, then-Governor Ventura, for some unknown reason, decided to veto that funding, and consequently, we were left with nothing. We're hoping that this year, as you consider putting together your omnibus transportation recommendations, that you could, well, $125 million might be a little bit unrealistic, not that it's not needed, but given the overall parameters that you're going to have to work with, that we're at least hopeful that you could come up with an amount that would be at least as much as what, if not more than what you came up with 2 years ago. Thank you.
Any questions?
Representative Hennessey.
Okay. I had a similar question then, or concern that Representative Anderson raised. You know, for example, Representative Ruth has made a very compelling case on Highway 14 in terms of safety. How would this practically apply if her county or community were interested in accessing, you know, the rural road safety account? You know, what would be the steps in order to address, you know, a road that I assume would be a candidate for this given all the fatalities that they've had?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, it would be very similar to the current local bridge program, where the project would be submitted to the Office of State Aid and criteria and priorities are established, and it would be based on those priorities and criteria.
Representative Hornstein, I think this account is going to be managed somewhat by transportation. I would imagine they would set up the criteria of how they would dispense the funds. We can tighten up the language. It's up to the committee to look at that, and the chair would welcome any thoughts on how we do this account if we proceed with it. So I think the more directions we can give on how we want it spent, the better we can encourage it being spent. Representative Leader, do you have a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, in the past, rather than giving the legislator involved in, again, policy, generally the commissioner sets up a committee, and that's been with county commissioners and city engineers, and they usually establish a policy, and I think that's been good practice.
Mr. Chair, to that point, in the legislation, it does call for an advisory committee for the local road improvement program.
And this is somewhat follow the local bridge account, which has been somewhat non-controversial where the funds went. So I would hope it would continue. But I think just to follow up, the narrower the scope of what this can be used for, the more effective it will be in getting the money where it's needed. So we can look at that when we put the final language together to see if it's the scope we want, if we want to broaden the scope or whatever. But I agree with Representative Reeder, we don't want to get, we're being so tight or so loose. Representative Thiessen, where are you?
I'm over in the corner.
Oh. I got your name down, I was trying to figure out where you are. Thanks. Representative Thiessen.
Well, kind of to that point, the legislation as it's written here, to that task force talks about having the Association of Minnesota Counties be the agency that's consultative. Is that typical to name a particular group like that? That's just more of a general question, and I guess it's
good question. Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chairman, in the existing Lick Road Fund, this language is found on page 3, lines 11 through 13. The three associations are specifically named to be consulted with for the development of grant procedures and criteria for those two existing accounts. Those accounts are both open to county, city, and town roads. The new account is open only to county state aid highways, and that is the reason why the Association of Counties is the only association that is listed in the section dealing with the new account. That's on page 2, lines 25 to 28.
Thank you, sir.
And can I, on a separate subject, but
go ahead.
Why are we eliminating loans?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, the reason we're recommending a change from grants to loans is because at the present time we have a huge shortfall in the county state aid highway funds for counties. You heard Commissioner Madsen and myself mention that we're $195 million short just in preserving what we have. For us to borrow money is not going to serve our purpose if we have to pay it back. We really need grants. We don't have the money to come up with this trunk highway corridor account request that we're getting from MnDOT. And you'll hear some very specific testimony shortly about the cost of these local shares. So that's why we're requesting that it be changed from loans to grants.
If I can just follow up.
Thank
you, Mr. Chair. Under the current language, it would be grants or loans. So you could still get your grants under the language. And how is that administered now? Is it that who makes the decision of whether it's a grant or a loan?
There was never any money put in an account. It was vetoed, so it hasn't been administered yet.
So, okay. Good answer. But that still raises the question, I mean, if the language is currently flexible, do we have any idea how that would be administered in the future, I guess?
Mr. Chair, Representative, at the current time, the Trunk Highway Corridor account is the only account that has appropriated money, and those have only been appropriated as loans at the current time. So it's administered by MnDOT.
Anybody else have a question?
Just a minor point maybe to the bill's author. Do we require an amendment to change the name of the account, or is there some sort of definition of a rural road that would include roads in Hennepin and Ramsey, for example? Is that...
Good question. Mr. Vanasek.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, even though the account is termed Rural Road Safety Account, there are rural roads within the seven county metro area.
So there's a definition of rural roads.
Right, so
the statute.
Is not, the funding would not just be limited to greater Minnesota counties. Funding would be available to metropolitan counties.
And by definition, one would actually find a rural road in all of these.
I think the question is there a definition in state statute of a rural road? Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that there is a definition that would apply to this account. The definition would have to be determined under the eligibility criteria that would be developed by MnDOT under paragraph B of section 3.
Just a suggestion to the author, it might be something that he wants to clarify.
Good point, Representative Hausman. Any further questions? Representative Earhart.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Swenson, is this a bill for rural Minnesota, or is there something for metro Minnesota?
Representative Swenson.
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman and Representative Earhart, I think that you just heard from Mr. Vanasek and here that...
That's why I asked the question.
I think you heard from him that there could be roads in the seven county metro area that would be eligible.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Swenson, it sounds to me like the answer to my question is yes. If this is for rural Minnesota primarily.
Representative Earhart, the 25% of the money, excuse me, 50% of the $50 million would be spent in the 7-county metro on rural roads. That definition, as you just heard, is not very defined. Now, I don't know if Edina has any rural roads there, but I think we, and that's why I'm trying to be funny, I just, I'm not sure what the definition should be on that. And that should be decided by this committee of where that money can be spent.
That should be, excuse me,
Representative,
should be decided by what?
This committee, if we want to change the language of what defines rural roads in the 7-county metropolitan area.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we've got another 75 million as instead of the 50.
Ms. Ruffel, is that split differently or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, the other money, the roads of regional significance and the trunk highway corridor count are for all counties. It's not just restricted to any particular area of the state.
Let's see another hand up, Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, you as chairman and chairman of the policy transportation just made good points on Mike Wright for years that in describing the metro area as a 7-county metro, and the MnDOT metro district includes Chisago County, that's the reason Chisago County never floats to the top in any project for priority. Thank you.
I didn't mean it that way. You are in a unique situation. If you have some language that you wish to bring forward, Representative Nelson, to change that, you can do that. I'm not sure if you want to be in a metropolitan area or you want to be in the greater Minnesota part of it, but that would only probably affect the $50 million account where it's split 50-50. The other you would be, I think, able to get it no matter what because you're not considered metro or greater Minnesota and those, that's $75 million.
Chairman Fisher, if I may, under on page 2, line 33, 34, 35, Representative's concerns are addressed under that situation that Chicago is part of the 8 county. It's not a 7 county metro where the split is. The 20.
That's my point, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So you're glad to be included, sir?
No, sir.
I think he wants to be stricken from that one. And Representative Nelson will put this together. The chair will entertain any motion you want to change that.
We'll take 50% of it just for Chisago County.
Might as well start high.
We need a lot of catching up, too, so.
Yeah. Any further questions? Next on the list, I have Ms. Miller and Mr. Sheehan. Oh, Don Thiessen, excuse me, I missed somebody. Let's go.
You waved anybody in this room?
Oh, you waved?
Oh. All right.
A name like that, it's like Cleveland, you should be waving.
Mr. Chair,
welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is not Don Thiessen. I'm Jeff Blue, the county engineer for Waseca County, but I didn't formally make the agenda, but I was told to come up and on his behalf at this time. That's all right with you, sir.
Anything. We're questionable. You never know what's going on. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Just a little background on myself. I am the Waseca County Engineer and also the Vice President of the Minnesota County Engineers Association. So I'm speaking on behalf of all 87 counties in the state of Minnesota. As you've heard in testimony from Commissioner Madsen and Carol Lovrell, the $125 million request does have three parts, $50 million for routes of regional significance, $50 million for rural road safety program. And yes, the rural road safety program is termed as a rural road safety program, but specifically in the bill, there are $25 million set aside for the 8 counties, including Chisago County, to be divvied up
in those eight counties. So we're looking at $25 million for those eight counties and $25 million for out-state counties or the other 79 counties in the state of Minnesota. So if you take that $25 million basically and divide it by 80, or the out-state counties, you're looking at about $300,000 per county in out-state Minnesota, and basically about $3 million per county in the metro area. So just looking at it from an out-state county perspective, being in Waseca County, a $300,000 grant to the county would be a significant grant, enough money for Waseca County to build an entire mile of roadway out in the rural area. So it would be a significant grant to the out-state counties. Now, by nature, you probably all know that county engineers are a very conservative group, as engineers tend to be. And, you know, it's not our opinion that bonding for local transportation needs is the answer for the long haul, but it seems to be one of the answers we can come up with here in the short term. You've heard testimony about the $195 million annually that counties are short in our construction fund. Where that number comes from is the county engineers have done a 50-year life cycle cost analysis, which is basically what we feel our road should last. Once you build a bituminous road, you're looking at about a 25-year life on that road before you need to overlay it, about another 12 and a half years, and you overlay it again, and that gets you to your 50-year life on that roadway. And based on all 87 counties reporting to the County Engineers Association, our annual need, and this is annually, of $195 million just to stay even. That's building no more roads to a higher design. It's just keeping our roadway system in a similar shape that it is now. So you can see that in 2004, our construction apportionment through the county state aid highway system was about $214 million. So you can see that the $195 million annual need in construction funds is almost double what we're receiving in our state aid apportionment. So we are far behind in construction. The governor talks about the biggest construction funding package ever in the state of Minnesota, $400 million in bonding for state roads. But to be honest with you, there was no money in any of those bills for local roads. Local systems, your county systems, your city systems, your township systems are failing. People are dying on the systems. The roads are worn out. They're getting narrower as we overlay them. The shoulders are getting narrower, and more people are dying on our roads. And on top of that, counties and cities are being asked to match large trunk highway project, corridor projects, with local funds. So we're having a lot of needs drawn on our system. We can't keep up with what we have now, and the needs continue to grow. We've had no increase in fuel tax since 1988. The local levy limits on counties has put a significant strap on the money we can raise to build roads in Minnesota. In Waseca County, for example, where I'm the county engineer, we have sold state aid road bonds to build county roads. We've sold capital improvement bonds to build county roads. We have borrowed ahead an entire year in our state aid road construction account, and now we're selling capital equipment notes to buy equipment so that we can steal money from our equipment fund in order to build roads. So we've run out of ways to fund our system locally, and we look to the legislature to give us some help statewide to build local roads. Most counties have gone entirely to a reclaim and overlay system where we're building very few new roads. We're trying to keep the roads that we have from falling apart. Like I said, our shoulders are getting narrower, our road beds are getting old, and our drainage systems are wearing out. In my opinion, counties no longer have a road construction fund through state aid or through local levy. We now have a road maintenance fund because we're not building roads anymore. We're just trying to maintain them. So as county engineers, and as any engineer knows, we enjoy a good challenge, but I believe county engineers and local representatives have been challenged beyond the point that we can deliver anymore, and we just ask that you see fit to fund this program to help fund local roads.
Thank you.
Representative Halsman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I haven't seen the bill, but I've read about the bill that apparently Dakota and Washington County will have, and I don't know if we're going to be hearing that. That asks
anything that's been
for
passed to us.
Permission to raise local taxes in order to build local roads. It would be interesting, because we're going to hear from a number of counties today, whether people would weigh in on that option that presumably we might be talking about here.
Representative Hausman, I've heard of that bill being floated around. I don't know if they have an author for it, but I will hear it. It's up to the committee whether it passes it out or not to taxes. I imagine that's where it would go next. So I just haven't seen it being put in or anything like that.
And my reason for raising it here, since we have all of these people who are testifying, it's also like a question come to us. We've heard this for a number of years, and if we continue to do what we're doing, do the counties have a plan B for coming up with a different idea for revenue?
I know there's also several counties, including mine, that is asking for a local option sales tax extension for Rochester to do our local road projects. And that's still up in the air also. So there are several different variations of how to fund local roads. And so, Mr. Brewer, if you want to answer the question.
Mr. Chair, there's a number of different county engineers probably from the counties that you're speaking of. I know the Washington County engineer is here, and I wouldn't want to speak on their behalf, but when they do come up and testify, I think that they'll be able to answer questions specifically towards those counties.
And my reason for raising it here is to say, I think we don't want to build an inequitable system where we begin to allow those entities that want to raise their own taxes, and then we have some counties where roads work and others that don't. That whole issue of building a state that works in some counties and doesn't work in others probably isn't a scenario that we anticipate. And so that's why I'm asking, not those counties, but other counties, if you have any thought about counties coming separately.
Representative Housman, maybe I'll tackle that. I've had conversations with Representative Abrams on the equity of that. Some counties could raise a huge amount of money on a local option sales tax, whether it's gas tax, whatever. Some counties, it's nothing. And is that the way we want to fund roads? So that's a discussion that I'll be happy to have when it comes forward. I have my county pushing me to do that. I have told them that I'm more interested in looking at the whole state. I'm getting some heat for doing that, but so far I've kept them at arm's length. Because my arm is getting the head chewed out of it. So just to let you know where I
today, Mr. Chair.
No, and honestly, I have a problem with trying to fix it that way, because I don't think it'll be equitable. I think we'll find out there'll be a lot of haves and a lot of haves not. So I'm trying to come up with something that would. I don't know if you want to comment or that sums it up.
Yeah. Well, just to comment to that, I mean, every county's needs are different. The metro county is dealing with congestion. The counties in the agriculture areas are dealing with problems of weight restrictions on the roadways. You'll hear a number of different bills about weight restriction, I'm sure, during the sessions you've heard in the past. And like you say, you know, some of the larger counties have the tax capacity to do those things, but smaller counties, Waseca County isn't a big generator of people coming in. I mean, we go to Mankato, we go to Albert Lea, we go to Owatonna. A lot of people don't come to Waseca unless you're a local. So our ability to raise taxes, to build roads, isn't as great as some others, but I feel that our need, being an agricultural community, to strengthen our roads and widen our roads, is just as great or potentially larger as some of the counties that have the availability to raise the taxes. So we look for a statewide program that we can all administer, that we can all use, so that, to be quite honest with you, there's not a lot of finger pointing and saying that I won't vote for this and I won't vote for that, whether you're a commissioner or a representative or a county engineer. We're trying to get something that's equitable for everybody and something that'll work statewide.
Ms. Miller. committee.
And
have you guys all written Dorman straightened out yet?
I'm working on it.
Bless you.
Mr. Chair, representatives, my name is Susan Miller. I'm the Freeborn County Engineer, as you've heard, in Representative Dorman's district. I'm here to speak to you about the new component to the local road improvement program, specifically the Minnesota Railroad Safety Program. There are a number of points of that program that you've already discussed in some detail. Most importantly, you need to know that when discussing transportation funding, what became vitally apparent to us as county engineers is more and more people are dying on our rural two-lane roadways. The definition of a rural two-lane roadway is not, as Mr. Williams referred, in state statute. However, it is in our highway design and our MnDOT standards for designing rural roads. There are rural roads in Washington County, Hennepin County, and several of those eight counties that are listed in the bill that are receiving the $25 million. There are rural roads in greater Minnesota that desperately need these funds. In Freeborn County, being a rural, very rural agricultural county, a $300,000 a year infusion into our system to specifically address the safety issue would result in a typical overlay project where we're building up to add an overlay, so our shoulders are getting narrower, our recovery area is much, much less than what it is. If the $300,000 was there, that would make the decision between trying to put another Band-Aid overlay on that project and looking at a full regrade to get that width, to get the shoulders, to get the clear zones back so we have a nice, safe roadway. We're not in the same world as we were in 10, 15, 20 years ago. We all drive with cell phones, stereos on. I have four kids, a dog, and a husband. I don't pay attention when I drive when they're all in the car. We're in a whole different world when we drive in our cars anymore. A distracted driver, a drunk driver, they're out there. We can't change that driver behavior. As much as we're trying to change that and correct that and educate that, you can't change that. But what we can do is much, you know, I have toddlers in my house. When you have toddlers in your house, you condition that environment for those toddlers. We need to condition our environment for those distracted drivers that are out there. That means we need to get the obstructions out of the road right away. We have utility poles 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 feet off the edge of the traveled roadway. In 1 second, if you look away from the road and you catch the edge of a blacktop road, you're going to hit that power pole. That's the difference between life and death. Some of the key points of the program, when we looked at our crash data from the Department of Public Safety, has been a tremendous, tremendous partner with us in developing this program. When we look at those crash facts, we can't come up with one clear-cut issue for any one county or for all of the counties that sticks out. Is it the narrow road issue? Is it obstructions in the road right-of-way? But every county engineer knows off the top of their head, when every one of us sits down here, they can name one road on their system or one area where they know they have a transportation safety issue. They know where they can spend that money tomorrow. So this money, should you be so gracious as to grant this to the counties, will result in real projects, real construction dollars being put forth out there to save lives. It's something that can be done immediately. It's construction dollars. It's not money that's going to be earmarked for studies and reports and for education, although a very important component of this project, and I have to give a lot of credit to Mike Wagner, the Nicollet County Engineer, Dick Larson, the Mille Lacs County Engineer. They are the co-chairs for our association on developing this program. They developed the 50. You've heard the Towards Zero Death program the state of Minnesota is developing, safety, the federal legislation. I'll talk about engineering, education, emergency response, enforcement as the 4 E's. We're proposing the 50. And in receiving this money, every county engineer accepts that responsibility to engage the public in public safety. That means we as county engineers, as people who go to church in our community, who go to a Kiwanis meeting every Friday morning at 7 o'clock in the morning, who have kids in the schools, who have teenage drivers on the verge of getting that license, we need to go out there and engage the public in how to be better drivers and the driver attentiveness. Our whole department has taken this on as an initiative. Our truck drivers have a lot of skills beyond driving those trucks, and they're taking this message out there. We have several that have teenage kids that want to go out and take this message of driver attentiveness out to the public, out to the people that they share coffee with in the coffee shops. So we're making this a department-wide initiative in our department, and if this program was to go forward, that would be a requirement
of every county to undertake that initiative with their department and as a county engineer. So we do create a fifth E in this program, other than separate from the Towards Zero Death, of engaging the public much more than educating them. We want to engage them, and that's in where we live and where we work. This would be a local program to complement all the safety programs that you're hearing about. You're hearing about it in the federal reauthorization. You're hearing about it in the Towards Zero Death program. But this is a statewide local investment. Every county will benefit from this, and every county can turn this into a real project as soon as the money is received. We all have projects on the books that we can look at putting this into a real project. Last summer, we began the project to reconstruct a series of S-curves on a real two-lane road that took about 450 cars a day. Those S-curves, we had two fatalities in the last 15 years on those S-curves. We had a number of serious injuries and accidents. It was a farm-to-market road between the small village of Conger and the city of Albert Lea. I happen to live halfway in between there. I just moved out there 2 years ago. In September, during duck hunting season, I got a phone call with a house full of family from the Sheriff's Department at 11:30 at night in the misting rain that three teenagers had just gone off that series of S-curves. We were just getting ready to regrade that this fall. And those teenagers had gone off the S-curve. They were doing 70 miles an hour. They'd been drinking. The only thing that saved those three kids' life was the fact that we'd already acquired the right-of-way and we've already cleared the obstructions out of the right-of-way, or those kids would be dead. After the S-curves have been completed, we've had nothing but rave reviews from all the farmers who are out there, all of the kids who drive that every day, from the school bus drivers, on how much safer it is because of the visibility. But that was a clear indicator to me how important it is for us to have that money. That was a $100,000 small little grading project that we were able to put out. If I had three times that would be three areas that I could target that money to. So that's one specific example. All of the projects that would be done with this would be capital projects, would be moving dirt, would be widening shoulders, would be taking out those S-curves that you drive, taking out a vertical curb where you can't see over a hill. It would result in real projects moving dirt. That would free up some of our county state aid dollars potentially for improving signage, improving the retroreflectivity of the signage, improving striping, adding rumble strips, edge line rumble strips in some areas. So those other dollars could be leveraged in our county state aid system to pay for some non-bond eligible safety improvements. Don Tyson is here, the Washington County engineer, and he's going to speak to the other component of this, that it's not a rural metro issue. We all have rural roadways, or most of us have rural roadways and areas of safety that we know our money can be addressed.
Any questions from Ms. Moore? Mr. Tyson.
Morning, Mr. Chair. I am Don Tyson, the Washington County engineer. Sorry for the...
You're just trying to screw up the chairs.
How am I doing?
Doing good. Easy. Hey, watch the comments over there.
Well, as you heard testimony, rural road may be a misnomer because we're really talking about the type of road design, and what you want to think about is a road without curb and gutter. And certainly the metro area has plenty of these two-lane roads that have narrow shoulders, ditches, and the type of hazards that we've been talking about. Last fall in Washington County, in a period of just 2 weeks, we had three memorials erected alongside of a road, and I think many of you have seen these now. Crosses are placed out there, hockey jerseys, stuffed animals, and they're the result of three young lives that were taken by three separate accidents. And these are gripping daily reminders of these tragic incidents. And all these three kids did wrong was go off the road. That's all they did wrong. And we don't think going off the road should result in a death penalty. It really doesn't matter why they went off the road, if it was excessive speed or other contributing factors. It could be something as simple and as unfortunate as trying to avoid a deer in the middle of the night. But if you go off the road on thousands of miles of our county two-lane roads, you're going to have a tragic result. I remember last year after Herb Brooks' tragic accident, watching a Fox TV9 report. We sent a reporter out to the State Patrol training facility to try to educate people how to get back on the road safely if you go off. And this driver was on the State Patrol facility. They had wide shoulders, a very gentle slope, wide ditch bottoms, and no obstructions. And they had a heck of a time in conditions like that just getting back onto the road safely. Well, I called the station after that and said, that's not the reality out in the real world on our county road system. We don't have gentle slopes like that. We don't have wide ditches. If you're going to go off the road on these road two-lane roads, you're not going to have a chance to bring it back onto the road safely. So we think it's time that we start a safety program aimed at trying to make a difference out there. Too many people are dying on our rural roads. And we know we have a successful program in the Township Bridge Program. You heard Rick Jones from State Aid talk about almost decreasing in half the number of deficient bridges. But we know we can make a difference if we start making some improvements out there that are badly needed to our road system. So similar to this, to the Township Bridge Program, this Minnesota Rural Road Safety Program is going to result in projects. It's not going to result in studies. It's not going to be reports. It's going to be real projects that make a real difference. So we urge your support for House File 1850.
Any questions? Thank you. I have Mike Sheehan and Mr. Fingleson.
Mr. Chairman, while they're coming up, I would like to ask a question of John Ross.
Sure.
What's the carrying charges on the $125 million and what the carrying charges on the $400 million that the governor has already filed?
What's the interest? Accumulated interest would be on $125 million. Is that your question, what the accumulated interest would be?
At 20-year bonds, how much is it going to cost us to rent the money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, at current interest rates, the general rule of thumb is that any project that's bonded for will cost 1.5 times the principal over the 20-year life of the bonds. That fluctuates between about 1.47 and 1.52, depending on the rate they get when they go to market. But 1.5 times the principal is generally accurate for the full cost of the project.
We're talking, Mr. Chairman, of $200 million to rent the $125.
$125 would be an additional $62.5 million in interest.
Answer your question, Representative Earhart.
Yeah, we didn't get the money on the $400 million that the governor already borrowed.
It'd be the same.
$200.
Mr. Chair, that would be an additional $200
million. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Sheehan, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm here this morning just to give you some testimony and some experiences we've had and on working on trunk highway corridors and the importance of the high-priority routes, interregional corridors in southeastern Minnesota, whether it be Highway 14, 52, or 63. And before I start addressing the Highway 52 interregional corridor, I'd just like to give you an experience that we've had as far as how we funded three major interchanges in Olmsted County to match the trunk highway dollars that we needed to come up with the county share of these projects. A year ago last fall, we sold general obligation bonds for $12 million to match the three interchanges, and we're paying those $12 million worth of bonds back out of the general fund, tax levy, property tax fund, to match those three interchanges. Now, just going on to this sheet that I passed around to you, this next project that's coming up here is on Highway 52, and like I say, Highway 52 is an interregional corridor between I-90 and I-94. And the segment that I'm talking about right now is the Orinoco Pond Island segment, which is the north part of Olmsted County into the south part of Goodhue County. That total segment, we, the county, were the project manager of that corridor study, whereby we're completing the official map within the next 30 days. That construction cost for that segment is $90 million without any right-of-way cost. The project, the Orinoco project, which is included in the governor's accelerated project schedule, is scheduled or estimated at $32 million. The county cost is anywhere from $2.5 to $5 million, depending on the cost participation policy that we agree to with the Department of Transportation. In the city of Orinoco, city under 5,000 has a cost of just over $235,000. And like I said, these costs do not include the right-of-way costs. That project is scheduled for a bid letting in November of 2005. And so we're here to ask for your support of that $25 million of a grant program to fund those counties that have these type of projects in their county. We think they're very beneficial. We think they're needed. But like I said earlier, we in Olmsted County have already sold $12 million worth of bonds, which goes on the property tax to fund the earlier three interchanges that we are currently working on at this time. And on the back is a map that kind of shows the layout of that Highway 52, the Anoka project. In red is the trunk highway system. In yellow is the county state aid highway system, the proposed county state aid highway system, which is the connector routes to the trunk highway 52. And in the blue, it shows the local collector routes, which will be part of this project that's scheduled for next fall. And I think, as the chairman and many of you, the members know, Highway 52 is an important connector route to us. It provides a safer, these improvements will improve the safety, will improve mobility, and will also improve the economic development of the entire state with these type of projects. So with that, just a brief outline of what we've been trying to do, and like to work with the committee on this important bill.
Representative Reeder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Mr. Sheehan, do you get after the effect needs projected? After you complete, these are coming up, and you don't get needs on them right now, apparently, because this is a new design. But are you getting future needs based on what you spent?
Mr. Chair, Representative Leader, we will get after-the-fact needs after the projects are completed, because we are not drawing needs or county state aid needs on these projects today.
I just wondered. I didn't know if they cut that out. Okay.
Any further questions for Mr. Sheehan? Good morning, Mr. Finlayson.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chairman and committee members, I am Wayne Finlayson, Wright County Engineer. And I'm here to talk about a project that is not as far advanced as the projects that Mike Sheehan talked about. Hopefully you all have a handout here that I passed out involving specifically Trunk Highway 101. This is one of the accelerated major bonding projects which was identified by the Palenque Molnar administration last year. It is the segment of Trunk Highway 101 between the Crow River and the Mississippi River. Many of you that going up north on weekends to cabins and so forth, I think you're probably familiar with this segment. Coming from 94 in the Rogers area, going up the Elk River, very congested roadway a good part of the time. And the specific project that's identified is a portion exclusively in Wright County, as indicated, from the Crow River up to Mississippi at the border of Otsego and Elk River. It's a much-needed project due to the present and future traffic volumes that do exist on this route and will in the future in this fast-growing part of the state. Please note the volumes that are indicated on the handouts. We're talking about some big numbers here when you look at the estimates of 95,000 vehicles a day for that segment from Rogers up to St. Michael here, 2025, upwards of 72,000 and beyond. And then specifically, where it impacts the county is, you see there's actually four county highways, county state aid highways, that intersect this segment. Facade 39, where you see a projected traffic of 25,500. This just came out of our recently completed transportation study. Highway 37, where you've got something in the neighborhood of 6,000 vehicles a day now, in the not-too-distant future, 33,000 ADT, and finally Highway 36, where you're looking at 26,000 vehicles. The concern is the local share. If you look at the legend on the left-hand side, it talks about the project with the construction of the actually three interchanges plus an overpass at Highway 42 in the green square. The signalized intersections will be upgraded to the interchanges, and overpasses are expected to improve the safety and increase the traffic flow. This is a project that was scheduled for 2013 and has moved up by 7 years. Total cost of just under $54,000, and the big concern we have is the local share here, which is equivalent to probably 2 years of our annual allocation for state aid money, something in the neighborhood of $10 to $13 million, depending on, and I realize MnDOT is in the process of looking at their revising the cost-sharing policy. We've been told that it's going to be in that neighborhood of 15 to 20%, which is going to be $9 to $10 million. We don't have that kind of money. We have stretched our budget to the limit. We've advanced encumbered in Lake County as much as we can for the future, 1 year in advance, just to maintain our system with very little improvements. Yet we know this is a very important project, but we, Lake County and the cities involved here, Otsego and St. Michael, do not want to be the ones to kill the project, but we just don't know how we're going to be able to do this without the money being in the form of a grant. That's why we would be very much in favor of the bill that's proposed for the Trunk Highway Corridor account, that the money be in the form of a grant as opposed to a loan. We already are looking at bonding. We have bonded for equipment and trying to look at every means we can to keep our transportation system together for the future, and especially in the fast-growing area that we are in Lake County. So we certainly would appreciate your consideration of supporting the bill, and specifically that the grant be changed from the loan be converted to the grant option. So,
Representative Hauser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if either of you were in your positions 10 years ago, but if you could take us back 10 years ago, was this a similar problem in terms of the local share, or has MnDOT's policy changed over a 10-year period in terms of expectations of local share?
How long have you been around, Chair?
First.
Like forever.
I've been around for 10 years plus, so I can speak to that. This has been a change. We certainly understand the situation that MnDOT is in. As recently as a year ago, we were told that there would not be any local cost involved in this project. But again, because of the situation that MnDOT is in, I've been forced to change their policy, and so there has been a significant difference, not in 10 years, but just in the last year. So that answers the question.
And that would also be the perception of the other.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that would be the answer that I would also give. The policy, the participation policy has changed in the last 2 to 3 years, and with these advanced projects that we're getting right now, they're good for the good of the entire state. But it also puts a burden on the local unit, in our situation, the county. And that $5 million, that's the amount that we get from our state aid allotment in 1 year. So that takes that allotment for that year, if that's what we choose to do. And we do nothing else in the county as far as construction. And, for example, the other three interchanges, the $12 million, that would be 2.5 years. So we made a decision with the county board and our finance people to go out and sell general obligation bonds to pay for those three interchange projects.
Thank you for your testimony. Say hi to the Sheehan brothers before we get home. I have somebody from the city of Osseo, so I want to get everybody that is coming in that is not a lobbyist. I'm sure you'll all be here later. Good morning, welcome to the committee. I have you down. This is the city of Osseo, so
most people know me by that.
Oh, Dave Callister. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. It's a pleasure to be here today to support this bill. We have been here
a long
probably
time.
4 years for sure, and we have tried to get some funding for Osseo. We are a little bit different than what the counties and perhaps the cities that you've heard from already, in that we get zero in state aid, period, because we're under 5,000 in population. The current state aid formulas use population as a factor whether you receive state aid for highways or not. And we think based on volume of traffic that we have a case for regional significant funds through this program. I did pass out a handout. I'm not going to go over that presentation because you've probably heard it before if you've been on this committee for the last few years, but you can look at it when you get a chance, and it points out that From our perspective in the city of Osseo, the current system contains some inequities. I don't think that that's necessarily a statewide issue. Osseo is unique, but we do need funding in our particular situation. I think the local road improvement fund, and I did sit on that committee when it was formulated, one of the main principles of that program was to fund projects that fall through the cracks. There are no other sources for funding these particular projects, and I think that was one of the principles. And in this case, it would fill a gap that we do have because we do not receive any state aid. The situation that Osseo is, we're a small community in the metro area. We're about 2,400 in population. We have a city main street which contains 17,000 vehicles per day, which, as far as I can tell, and nobody has disputed it, is the highest volume of traffic for a city street in the state of Minnesota. And 100% of the costs for maintenance, for repairs, for replacement is paid by the city of Osseo. We do not receive any state funding whatsoever in our situation. We have, within a 5 or 6 mile radius of the city of Osseo, we have over 150,000 people. It's a growing area in Maple Grove and Brooklyn Park around us. We have no room to grow. We're a 129-year-old community that has had, we were an old agricultural community that has this suburban area grown up around us. And so we do have a burden for carrying regional traffic. We also have the fifth largest school district in the state, of which one high school is in our community. That generates an additional 3,000 trips per day on residential streets. Not even talking about our main street here. These are 3,000 on side residential streets. 95% of the students come from outside of Osseo. So you can see we do have some unusual circumstances. We, as I mentioned before, have been here many times. I think 4 years ago we were told that the Constitution does not allow for giving money to cities under 5,000. However, in 2001, much to our dismay, there was a city that was granted approval, $200,000 a year for 10 years, and they're under 5,000 in population. So we know that it can be done. We've also been told to contact Hennepin County to work with them. You'll see in that packet that we have talked to Hennepin County, and there is no money available through Hennepin County. We have also talked to MnDOT, and we've had several meetings with them, including with Commissioner Molnau probably 6 months ago. And there is no money available under current programs for the city of Osseo. We have a $2 million project that we would like to do, and it would be a complete concrete reconstruction. So it would last for 30 or 40 years so that I wouldn't have to come back up here in another 8 years. Because if we do a mill and overlay, we're going to be in the same situation in 6 to 8 years trying to obtain funding. Our street is 3 years older than it was the first time I came here. The costs are higher. And we would like to have some solution to this particular situation. Another interesting fact is one of our main streets that we're looking for aid on here is only 10 years old. It's worn out. The property owners that live along this, it's Jefferson Highway right in the city, they still have 10 years remaining on their special assessments. The highway is worn out. Its useful life is over. We cannot go back and assess them twice for the same basic improvement. And I think if you'll look at the handout and if you try to understand the situation that we're in, we have no other avenue to go to for funding. So I think this bill would help the city of Osseo to get some funds to try to relieve some of the burden that we do have in our community. And so I would ask that the committee seriously consider not only the governor's $10 million, but to take a look at this bill and increase the funding for cities and counties that have situations that there aren't other funding sources readily available for. And I think that's a brief summary of our issue. We would really ask that you seriously consider this increase in funding.
Any questions? Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, and I didn't get his name, but I'd just like to point out again, you are probably correct to some degree, but directly you don't get any money. Indirectly, you're getting aid through the city of Osseo for your street, but the city elected not to put it on the county state highway system. That was a local option, my understanding. I'm familiar with Osseo. And so basically it was something you chose to do because they didn't want to meet the criteria for state aid standards. And now you're coming in, you're probably the only city in the state that has opted to do that. And that makes it difficult for the legislature to say we're going to give you money, because it was a local decision. Indirectly, Hennepin County is getting money based on their needs, and if they, for some reason, didn't opt to have you participate, that's a different situation than the other 86 counties. The other 86 counties somehow are working out. And I think we have to be a little cautious to say that you don't have the opportunity to get any money from the state, because that money is there.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think back in 1988, which was before my time with the city, they did do a 169 bypass, and that took a lot of the traffic off of the streets. It's returned with the growth. The choice was to either maintain a downtown or to let four lanes go through downtown Osseo with no parking, and I think that's a pretty easy choice. And I think if you look at the other communities that have state or county highways as their main, they all have parking. And I'm not sure, I can't specifically answer that because I wasn't around or with the city of Osseo in 1988. All I know is this is a city street, and we get about $6,000 a year from Hennepin County, which does not pay the electrical costs for the signal lights that operate them. And so we really don't have any source, and I'm not sure what was elected back in the mid-80s. All I know is we have an issue right now, and we've got a $2 million hole in our budget with no funding source.
Any further questions? Representative Hausman.
Well, I guess I never knew when to raise this, because it's really a conversation with all of the people who've testified, but the problem you're outlining is one we're feeling on a variety of kinds of transportation projects where we're moving masses of people. We've had this debate in this committee, for example, about LRT and the local burden imposed there. We're going to have that debate, I suspect, this session on commuter rail and the local burden imposed there. And if you continue to have to do this local effort, and if those transit projects do, in my county, for example, when we get to the central corridor, it will be so great, that local burden, that we literally would have to say we can't do the project. Now, that all that means is we stop moving in the metro area if we can't do these projects, moving masses of people. So I think, to put it in the broader context, you're talking about roads and highways. We have a very similar situation as we build transit corridors, and that's a conversation the whole state, we ought to say we're all in this together. I hear your pet pain, I hope later you'll hear mine, and that we say to one another, we are all in this together, keeping this state moving, and that local share is one that we're going to have to come to grips with.
Seeing that we're out of time, the remaining testimony can be taken at the next hearing. Is that okay? With that, the chair will lay the House File 1850 on the table. Representative Weider moves the minutes for the previous meeting. February 4th. All those in favor, any additional corrections? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Meeting is adjourned.